Watch with me. Let's talk about it. Talk about what we've seen. Buddy watch, buddy watch, buddy watch with me. Let's get to talking. It's not just TV.
Hello, this is Buddy Watch. We recap the TV we've just been watching and overanalyze it, and it's a great time. It is the festive season, so it is another Christmas special episode, a double whammy today. I'm Vaya. I have two special guests. I have Charisma Taylor.
Hi.
Charisma, friend of Neighbours Pod, her first foray into Buddy Watch, and husband of Charisma, Andrew Taylor.
Hello.
This is a husband and wife double act of people who watch Netflix Christmas rom-coms together.
It's fair to say I don't really like any movies. Okay. Andrew likes lots of movies. And we have moderately agreed this year that we will try and get through all of the Netflix Christmas movies between now and Christmas.
And we're talking about like all the old Hallmark ones that they have just stashed there recently.
Oh, have they?
So not just the ones they produce.
So this is my issue, is I don't know really where to look for a complete catalogue.
There's a heading. It's like it's beginning to
Look a lot like Netflix.
Yeah, that is the really hashy, crappy name. And Stan has their own one, which is also equally bad.
Oh, I haven't even thought of looking into Stan.
Yep, they seem to have all the other Hallmark ones that Netflix hasn't managed to lay their hands on.
Okay, I might need to keep this series going into the new year. So we've already buddy watched the Vanessa Hudgens thing, Princess Switch. Andrew, you've seen that too.
I have also seen that. I said we're committed to the cause, but we're going to watch as many of these lame Christmas movies as possible.
And Charisma had thoughts about that.
I did. I had one particular thought, and it just, when watching any movies, regardless of quality, I become strangely fixated on things that no other person would notice or care about. And there was one of these in The Princess Switch. I don't know if it's best. I think it's probably best to talk about it because there's something in The Christmas Prince 2 that reminded me of that. And so I can point that out with some parallels later.
All right, great.
We had to pause The Christmas Prince to discuss this fixation.
If you listen to Neighbours, Charisma might play the role of Kate. Kate often picks out minute details that the rest of us are happy to move on from, but she's not. So it might be like that. So Christmas Prince is what we're looking at with its sequel that just dropped overnight, A Christmas Prince, A Royal Wedding. I'm getting really confused by some of these titles.
Is there two in the title or is it just A Christmas Prince, like underscore,
colon,
you want to call it?
Yeah.
It's colon?
The Royal Wedding.
Okay.
Yeah. And Charisma, you were the one that told me it existed. I didn't know it existed. I haven't got Google Alerts set up that these things are coming out again. We'll just do a little reset of Christmas Prince. It was the sleeper hit of 2017, it's festive season, because didn't Netflix like troll itself?
So the US Netflix feed is actually like a notorious troll.
Right.
But it upped its game quite brilliantly by claiming that they used their data to suggest that 48 people or something like that had watched Christmas Prince every single day since it had been released. And it was like maybe like 20 plus days at that point. And I think the tweet ended with something on the lines of, who hurt you?
Yeah. And then that's all it took for it to become a sensation because then everyone wanted to see why it was so bad.
I know there's a few people in the Facebook group who have been saying they weren't aware of the whole like bad Christmas movie kind of like phenomena.
Yeah.
We enjoyed many bits about this movie, but it's because it's bad.
Yes, but it's the good kind of bad.
Yes.
There is actual bad, and I would put Princess Switch in the category of actual bad. And there's also terrible, there's like a lady, Lacey Chabert one I watched where she's
I want to see that one.
She's 7 months pregnant as herself and the character is not pregnant. So the whole movie is like Lacey Chabert's shoulders up.
Okay.
And she's carrying big gifts.
Oh, no, this is the one where she gets confident, isn't it?
Didn't we watch this last year?
No, this is the one where she gets all magically confident and then, like, she loses her magical confidence to the end?
I think so, but she also has apparently done dozens of these. It's, like, her special side hustle.
Isn't she, like, working for, like, some gifting company?
That's Eliza Taylor. That's Christmas Inheritance.
No, I think that she also works for a gifting company. This one. Well, like, how many things? Apparently,
it's not one where the person goes from the big city to a small town, meets a tradie. There's also a dog.
She goes
with her boss to go do a pitch.
Yeah.
And she's confident. And then just before she does the pitch, she loses her confidence.
Yes.
And it's all very dramatic.
Yes.
And it's in the snow.
Okay, so that one's actually bad.
So we've established that gifting companies are a common thing in these films. I was reading an article earlier today that also suggested baking.
Yes.
Baking is like apparently a thing in these films.
Baking is the quintessential rom-com profession. Like it's sanctioned by the rom-com authorities. It's wholesome enough for someone to be a romantic interest.
That men will fall in love with you if you know how to cook.
Yep.
But only if you know how to cook.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this job that Amber has in Christmas Prince is another romantic comedy approved profession. And that is journalist or writer or junior writer as she begins in Christmas Prince.
I think she's a junior editor, not a writer.
No, because I want to call out Charisma on this, right? Because she thought this was going to get recapped. So she actually insisted, as we finished up with Christmas Prince, A Royal Wedding, that we revisit the first 15 minutes she could just fact check a couple of little details for herself.
Yeah, it's wise.
Yeah, I wanted to remember whether or not the friends were any more important in the first one than the second one.
No, exactly the same, I think you'll find. Exactly the same level of not very important.
Why are they even there?
I also want to, I'll hold on the one thing that, another thing that she actually fixated on and wanted to fact check, but I'll come to that later because I'm sure she'll touch
what
upon
I actually
it.
Wanted to fact check was just, I kind of got a really different tonal vibe from the opening of the second one. And obviously because, like, you know, they're already in love, so everything is like fine.
Yeah, what on earth else could they possibly be striving for?
But then I just kind of thought a lot of the vibe of the characters seemed like slightly different. And I wanted to check if I imagined that or if it's just like I haven't watched a Christmas movie for a while, etc. And it wasn't just that I imagined that. And like the first note that I wrote watching the second one is, wow, what an unsubtle recasting of the dad.
Yeah, we might as well just start talking about the dad in both of them, because I thought that the dad in the first one had been overdubbed because it looked like his voice didn't match his mouth movements. I almost want to say that the dad they cast in the second one is the voice of the dad in the first one, because I feel like that guy...
Their voices are not the same.
I don't think they're the same.
Anyway, the point is, you got to take a risk if you're going to win. Right, you go over there to Aldi whatnot.
Aldovia.
Aldovia, that's it. And you make us proud.
What's with the sunglasses?
I don't want to get recognized.
Man, I don't need a disguise. I feel like a brand new person. Must be this fresh mountain air in Aldovania.
Pop, it's Aldovia.
Yeah, Aldovania has more snap.
Well, then I think there's a third guy out there who provided the voice.
So you're saying there's a third secret dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, like, first dad does speak quite strangely. Like, he has a very and low voice.
No, he has a absolutely like clear Chicago style accent. And the other guy in the second one absolutely does not.
Does
have
he have
that
a
accent.
New York accent where
Italian.
He's meant to be from?
It was like the Bronx or something. It was very Italian. It was not, his last name should not have been Moore.
No.
It was should have been like Morelli or something.
Maybe it was anglicized.
Maybe his mother was the one with the European heritage.
Okay. Yep, I'll accept that. So her dad is running a diner, New York style diner, and she worked for this paper and, she's just a junior editor or magazine, whatever it is, tabloid magazine. And what a drag. She's got to clean up the writer's messes. I'm like, that's actually a good job. Like, you're not going to roll your eyes and go, ugh.
I mean, that guy is a dickhead.
Sorry. Are you suggesting that line editing is a fun and enjoyable task?
I mean, I don't think it's a terrible task. I think some people like
editing. You're a grammar Nazi. Like, seriously, there is no fun in line editing.
Charisma would have a great time in that job. I also think that, okay, fair enough. You always see these dream jobs on movies and you think no one could ever have a bad day, but you would have a bad day. But she's acting like the servant girl. It's like, ugh.
Okay, it did start with a like pretty bad start to her morning though, right? She had to get in a lift with a guy with a bicycle. So he is clearly like ruining it for everybody. That's the first comment I made when I watched this last year. Lift guy is the worst. And then she starts talking to the other guy whose article is bad. And I was like, oh no, this guy's the worst.
Yeah.
I was like, is this what this movie is going to be? Just like this kind of parade of terrible, terrible characters. So she's the only one we get to like.
And even her friends get in on it because they demand on relitigating her entire love life while she's like talking about work.
Also, they've all got the same job as her, but they clearly only want her to rise up through the ranks. They're just like, we're happy down here in junior writer land, but you must transcend and rise above.
That's good friends, like suppressing their own dreams to allow you to achieve success.
Well, I mean, I think it's clear that she's the only one who actually wants to do that. Like, even in the second one, they're like, oh, life is so terrible now, we don't do anything fun.
What insightful character moments are you basing this observation about their characters on?
When they're like,
when they come on and make like broad like stereotyped actions.
Yeah, they rant about how they hate their current jobs but also don't remember the name of the magazine they used to work for only 1 year ago.
But how great that it shut down. What a scoop. So this magazine sends young, plucky, well, we don't know her age, but whatever. They send Amber to a nebulous European country, Aldovia. And I had a lot of fun when we recapped the Princess Switch trying to decide. We came to the conclusion that you could pick any Melbourne suburb and turn it into a fictional European royal country.
Coburgia.
Yep. Banduria.
Banduria, actually, I like that. That has a nice sound to it.
Anyway, so this is clearly the they've got the Scrabble tiles out and put together the name Aldovia. But she's across the politics of the country. And I also was wondering, I had to do some research recently on monarchies and I have retained nothing. Do you think Aldovia is an absolute monarchy or is it?
I have considerable notes about this.
Okay, go.
Because obviously there is a democratic apparatus in place. There is a prime minister. They talk about the prime minister.
That's right. We meet him briefly.
Yeah, we do. He pops up so he can be introduced to the fiancé's random friends. But like he's got nothing better to do with the country facing financial collapse. But
they just had to find another reason to have the friends in the movie.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, obviously the monarchy is still more actively involved in the day-to-day business of the place because I can't imagine Queen Elizabeth rocking up to like finance meetings.
Going, I know there's more to this than you guys are telling me. So it's whatever that term is for, it's not a constitutional monarchy, but it's when it's split between the parliament and the king and queen. It's not a catchy name, so that's fine. Amber is across the politics. She knows that the king's died and the prince has been gallivanting around the world. Prince Harry style, he's had all these tabloid headlines painting him as the toy boy, party boy, not interested in responsibilities guy.
So, they need a button the big chair by Christmas Day.
But if the prince is MIA, then what happens?
That's exactly what you're gonna find out. His Royal Hotness is due back this weekend, but just in case he abdicates, I need somebody there to capture the fireworks.
And she arrives, she somehow lands this story, because it's Christmas, and she's the only one that's around and wants to work during her Christmas holidays, goes to this country and winds up at the palace and is mistaken for the new tutor for the princess.
Two things that happen in between. She arrives at the airport, someone steals her cap. Then, there's a callback to that later, which is why I mentioned it.
Oh, yes.
Then, when she gets there, the prince doesn't turn up at the press conference. So, of course, she just breaks into the palace via a side door.
No,
with some other,
she
like,
couldn't go
staff.
Home empty-handed. That justifies all behaviours.
She could have just gone back to her editing job and her dad's diner. But this is the most precarious part of the whole thing is her basically being an identity thief to this poor girl, Martha, from Minnesota, who's supposed to be rolling up in two weeks' time to tutor the little girl. So Amber's even at one point asks her boss, I'm pretty sure this is illegal, and they just forget about that. Like, no, don't worry. Just take her identity.
It would also be immediately obvious to anybody who's ever been to Minnesota that she is not from Minnesota. Like, her voice could not be anybody who has ever grown up in Minnesota.
She doesn't sound sufficiently Fargo-ish for you.
The vowels are wrong.
And if you are getting a job at any type of government establishment, let alone royal establishment, I'm pretty sure you'd have a high level of security checks.
Like photos, even.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to think that it's not a very big or sophisticated country. And we'll come to this when we see like some economic details about how much money may have been stolen from the country.
But is Mrs. Averill doing letting these people into the palace in the first movie and then becoming Mrs. Averill in the second one? Also,
Averill. I keep writing both because it keeps sounding different no matter who says it. But I have much thoughts of her about her later that I would like to discuss. Okay. She enrages me.
And I have questions about her too. So she goes undercover to tutor the princess who somehow, for some reason, even if it is Europe and they don't have, like in Australia, we have very long holidays over December, January. Like that's our big school break between school years. But even in Europe, school would start shutting down for Christmas. Like you'd have a couple of weeks off. So I don't know why they've put a rush on getting her lessons.
So I think in the first one, I actually got the impression that she was like basically very mollycoddled and she wasn't allowed to do anything. And I don't actually know if she attended regular classes in the first one, whilst in the second one, she's obviously attending a school. I think the tutor was just a private tutor thing because she wasn't at school.
Yeah.
It is heavily suggested, I would say, that she is homeschooled in the first one. And what's the comment? Like that she's only allowed to study and go to the loo? Like that's all her mother will allow her to do?
Yes.
Poor oppressed princess.
And they almost went down the path of inspiration porn with the disability. Like they almost had when Amber says to Emily, oh, you're brave, you know. But luckily the whole movie wasn't all about how she was so brave because she was disabled. It was just like one throwaway comment and then she could go back to being a normal character after that, which was good. So obviously Amber's trying to do some digging. By the way, Amber Moore is the name of a very prominent Bold and the Beautiful character. I don't know if you remember.
I preferred Santa Barbara.
So Amber is trying to do some digging. She's like, oh, well, I'm here. I'll just live in the lap of luxury for a while and try and figure out if this prince is a hot mess. And obviously in the process falls in love with him and finds out that he's a nice guy, capital letters, nice guy, because he's nice to children. Obviously, it can't be Christmas unless the main love interest is nice to children. He shirks the orphanage press conference by running around the corner and playing with the orphans. And a friend of the show, Jelly, pointed out that orphanages aren't a thing anymore.
Just only in Christmas movies. Yeah. Christmas orphans are also a very highly recurring trope, I think.
And he's nice to his little sister and he wants to frolic in the snow and therefore cannot be a philanderer.
Is that high on your list of attributes you're looking for in a man, frolicking in the snow? Because I don't feel I've successfully ticked that box off yet.
I can't say that doing anything in the snow since I was like 4 has really appealed to me. I don't mind a frolic, but the snow is not really a requirement.
They never look uncomfortable as I imagine they should be in the snow. They all still have to, they're all, their hair's all still in place. No one's got frostbite.
Do you think that's because we're from a place where it's like, you know, perpetual summer, relatively speaking, and we haven't become comfortable in the day-to-day existence of the snow? Maybe if you were like expecting snow every day, you'd just be more like, it's snow, whatever.
Okay. Fine, fair point. So in the middle of all of her undercover sleuthing, Amber finds in the prince's secret cabin, his father's hunting cabin, that there's hidden documents about his secret adoption and rejigged birth certificate. So he's not the prince by blood. He's an adopted
prince. So there's some more breaking and entering, basically. She finds another part of the palace residence and then she just goes like snooping into actual cabinets and finds like a secret compartment in a desk.
Yeah. And pockets the manila folder and then instead of doing anything with that information, she Skypes her friends about it.
I mean, they work with her, so it's really the same as just passing the information on to work.
Also, she's Skyping them in their work day, and they don't have headphones on or anything. So half of the magazine office could get the scoop on that story.
But none of them do because they're not writers.
No, but also the editor claims that all her other writers are busy.
Yeah, because it's Christmas.
But she doesn't say they're busy between the week of the 18th and the 25th with actual like social stuff. She actually says they are on other... They're on other assignments and stuff. So they've all scrambled to come up with something.
They're doing carols by candlelight. So she's struggling with this dilemma about breaking the news of the paternity. But in the meantime, evil cousin Simon, who is next in line to the throne because of patriarchy and Princess Emily, doesn't get a look in. So he wants to jump on in with the ex-girlfriend of the prince.
It may actually also be because the princess is a minor.
Yeah, but they didn't say that.
No, I know they didn't say that. Also, like, she's a China doll, so she can't do anything.
It's probably the patriarchy.
Yeah, because they've had little kids get rise to the throne in previous generations.
Yeah, but they need a regent, so it would still be him.
Okay. And, I mean, none of those kids did a great job when they were monarchs, but, you know, it can happen. So while
he's like, I still don't want to be the king anyway. Sophia's like, cool. Hey, Simon, let's get hitched and do this. And they're like, okay, great. But then the queen finds out.
Yeah. And but also Sophia and Simon have snuck into Amber's room and taken the manila folder of evidence while she was frolicking in the snow. And they present to the parliament that he's not a prince by blood. So Simon's going to usurp his spot. But then Amber deciphers a poem and realizes that the previous king, the late king, left in his will, which he put into an acorn and dangled it on a tree, that the new decree would rule that the adopted son would be allowed to rise to the throne.
I just really want to think about, like, what do you think was going through his mind when he thought, I've obviously got a contentious legal situation that's going to unfold when I die.
Yeah.
I should definitely hide the documents that are the only thing that's going to resolve this positively for the people I care about in an ornament.
Yeah, don't call your lawyer up and put anything on file.
No, the lawyer should be disbarred. Like, some lawyer signed off on this. Like, he's obviously asked this guy to draw up his will.
Because it was a law. It was legal, this acorn document. So she goes home and the magazine won't print her story because it's boring. She just wrote about how the prince was nice.
Hey, you wanted a story about a playboy prince who doesn't want to be king, but actually he's a nice guy.
And they went, this is not your job anymore. Goodbye.
They went, this is not what Beat Now is about. It's unclear what Beat Now is about, but not that.
Well, it's about nothing now, obviously. Obviously, yeah. Its lack of clear vision was what undermined it.
And it's Amber's fault because she could have saved that publication.
If she just kept writing everybody else's stories.
So the prince comes to New York at 11:55 p.m. on the 31st of December 2017 and...
hangs out outside of Diana.
Yeah, just loiters and then professes his love to Amber and proposes, like bachelor style, only after a few weeks of knowing her. And says, come to my country and be married to me there and leave your dad. And she's like, yeah, okay. I don't have a job at the moment, so sure. But in the meantime, she'd published her article about the nice prince.
On her blog, right?
In her personal blog.
Yeah.
She's bringing blogging back.
Now, given that is that pretty much the end of the story now?
Yes. So
that dovetails nicely into the... No? Oh, you want to go back?
It isn't, because the whole thing is that the reason that Simon and Sophia don't win is because this whole, like, coronating someone new has to be done by the queen, again, for no reason.
Yeah.
So,
because what if she had died with the king in a terrible accident? Were they going to just stand around?
It would be by whoever
maybe he has a special extra will that's like hidden in some other random household object that only gets used once a year.
It's in a Brazil nut or something.
Yeah, so because she has to be there to preside and she's like, actually, I think my son might come around to this whole king business if he gets this woman back from America. And so she's just like chilling, refusing to do that, essentially. And then I think she might tell him and then he's like, oh, I better go and get her then.
And Emily showed him the blog.
Yes.
Because he couldn't use the internet. He said, my sister showed me the internet post that you wrote. It's like, okay, buddy. And I guess that's the only hint that Emily is computer savvy at all in movie one or movie two.
She has many secret skills in movie two.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently she's been allowed to do a lot more stuff since movie one.
Really expanded her horizons.
So off she goes, right? So now, Andrew, you said
I was going to say
the end of the movie.
That dovetails nicely. We're talking about her blog. That dovetails nicely into the start of the second movie where she is basically doing a voiceover of her blog post.
Yeah.
Somehow, through all this insanity, I'm still me. Even though I'm about to become queen of a small country, I promise to keep you posted on all my adventures to come, especially our wedding. On Christmas Day in Aldovia.
So it looks like she's been blogging for 12 months.
Do you think she's like, how do you reckon she's monetized this? Is this her like sole stream of income? Like, do you think you can monetize your WordPress blog if you have like, I am a future royal of a small obscure European nation?
Surely you don't need to because you have the money of the small obscure European nation.
Not really.
Does she though?
Well, I mean, they can still afford to put like events and stuff on and like do various other things. So they have some access to cash.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that like he's like funding her lifestyle yet. They're still independent. They're not married yet. They don't have shared finances. You don't know that.
Shared finances.
Shared finances.
Why did you laugh at that?
Because we have a very amusing form of shared finances, okay. Which
it resembles housemates more than people who've been married for more than 5 years.
That's fair enough. My partner and I have shared finances. And a shared bank account that we use for nothing, apart from we've gamified it because we've worked out if we put money in it, it gives us interest.
Do you get XP? You call it like XP, that's XP. Life XP you're taking out of the account.
So I think she has monetized it. I think because they're footing the bill, the palace is footing the bill for their flights back and forth to maintain a long distance relationship between New York and somewhere in Europe. Maybe she's got a Patreon attached to the WordPress.
What side of the wall do we think this country was on, by the way? East or west?
I imagine it to be like Albania, mostly.
Yeah, okay.
Smaller, but like in that kind of vibe. Yeah. Mostly because of the flag.
What is this flag looks like, Albania?
Oh, it just has more of that kind of...
That cresty vibe in the middle.
Yeah, more of the kind of Balkan and or like post-Soviet flag vibe.
Do you want to share one of the things you fixated randomly on, which was like the colours of the automobiles and the crest relative to the flag?
This is kind of... Like, gets to a spoiler at the very end of the wedding where, like, navy seems to be the colour du jour. But then also, like, the buses that bring the people in at the beginning of the first movie are also blue and the crest from the middle is, like, golden, you know, shapes. But then the flag, the outside of the flag is, like, it's green and white with a gold crest.
Yep.
So why is all of the royal stuff navy blue?
Maybe it's like in Australia how our flag is blue with the Union Jack on it and some stars, but then our sporting colours are green and gold for no reason.
That's actually called Aussie gold, that particular shade. It's called Aussie gold.
Great.
But I just always assume that's because particularly in the Commonwealth countries, right, just everybody has white, blue and red. So they had to find ways to differentiate that. And we were just like, we'll just take whatever rando colours you want.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe navy is special to them for a random reason.
Like it's just the royal house colour or something. But that did did irritate me mildly because there's no green anywhere in the palace, which seems kind of unpatriotic.
Charisma, do you have a theory as to where Genovia is located from the Princess Diaries world?
I mean, linguistically, somewhere near Italy.
Okay.
Like Italy, Switzerland.
Yeah. They're famous for their pears.
Well, that doesn't make sense based on the...
We'll overlay it on a real map of the world, that like by pear distribution. Like, it's like red if you're an extra fertile pear-growing region.
So, like, there is an actual place called Genoa in Italy.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of... I assumed it was basically faux Italy.
And there's Geneva in...
Yes.
Switzerland. I'm shaking my geography. And Princess Switch created Belgravia.
Yes. Yeah. Just taking the train line approach.
Also, I'll call myself out. When the Queen rocked up in Christmas Princess 2, in my head, I was expecting it to be Julie Andrews. I had totally programmed myself that I was expecting it to be Julie Andrews rocking up, and apparently that's Princess Diaries.
Yeah.
Which I've never actually seen.
Oh, you're in for a treat if you're into this genre so far. It doesn't deviate much.
Are we still allowed to like Anne Hathaway, like post like Les Mis?
Of course we are. That's her Oscar-winning role, firstly. Secondly, there's never a time where it's not okay to like Anne Hathaway. She's great at all times.
This was definitely a thing on the internet, that like Anne Hathaway was like not totes cool for quite some time.
I march to the beat of my own drum, and Anne Hathaway's playing that drum. Yeah, so you definitely need to do yourself a favour, PD1 and 2. And Chris Pine's in the second one.
I did know that.
Yeah, does a great job. They do borrow a lot. These movies have borrowed a lot from that world. A lot of things. The princess training, the new suite.
On that note.
Yes.
Do you think it's the same room from the Princess Switch?
It looked, well.
Even that same couch that you see the guy
it's
who's
not
like,
the same couch. It is definitely not the same couch. I saw you when you were freeze framing it to look at the couch. It's not the same couch.
Okay, but also.
The upstairs of the foyer area, I will pay that is potentially the same set.
Like the balcony. Outside the room. So this is where I became fixated on my thing in the Princess Switch, which is why I was also like, is this the same building? Are they shooting on the same set? Because also, that is the time in the Princess Switch that the most annoying thing happened. If you have watched this movie, it's fine. If you haven't and you watch it after this, you will not be able to unsee this because it is so obvious once you see it that I just can't imagine how it's happened. But his haircut is so bad. It's like very weirdly, like the prince's haircut over his ears has created like a very empty skin gap in like semicircles over the top of his ears. And it looks very, very strange.
It's just because they've done they've gone one too low on the sides and it's just a very severe part.
His hair doesn't go down to his ears. It's quite strange.
As I said, they've obviously gone one too low, like as they go through the sides.
The first time you notice it is on the balcony because he turns sideways. And then after that, I saw it all the time.
He clearly didn't get the Nashville hair and makeup team to sort him out. This is some inferior hair and makeup department that handled... This is Prince Edward, by the way, of Princess Switch. Prince Richard. The names are so generic.
Well, I mean, all prince names are.
Did you say Nashville?
Yeah.
Is that show, got a really high-quality makeup department or something? Is that, industry standard?
Well, at least Connie Britton would have a high standard. And Gunnar from Nashville is Prince Edward in the Princess Switch.
Okay, there. Now, I was wondering what the link was. Okay,
yeah, good.
She's seen him with better hair was the link.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So Amber's been blogging. She's probably got ad space that she sold on that thing. She's probably doing Spono, sponsored content. We find out that Richard's full name is Richard Bevan Charlton, which is amusing to me. It's always funny when they only ever call the royals Queen Helena and King Richard and as if they're fictional characters instead of, in real life, you'd have the Duke of Sussex and the Queen, the House of Windsor, all this other stuff. Whereas on these things, it's just King Richard that
I'm
is
I'm still
his
not
name.
Convinced this country's bigger than one suburb. So let alone having distinct regions that need their own lord.
Yep. So now Amber's famous. She's famous as much like our own Princess Mary from Tasmania, who met Frederick at a bar and then became Princess of Denmark.
You say that, right? But also, you don't know her surname either, do you?
Donaldson.
Is she just Princess Mary?
I didn't know that too. Yeah. But it took me a while. In my brain had to do it, to go through a few steps to remember Donaldson. What was her job? She had some kind of normal job.
For some reason, journo is in my head, some kind of light journalism or something like that.
I think she was, to borrow from Romeo Michelle's Husker Reunion, I think she was a sophisticated businesswoman. I think she did some kind of legitimate business.
Okay, we're having a Google off.
Business person.
That is vague. What is that? That could be anything.
So it is from Remy Michels. She's a sophisticated businesswoman.
She also worked as an English tutor in Paris.
All right, so far all of her jobs are Christmas movie approved.
Yeah.
She did marketing, direct marketing for the Australian Direct Marketing Association. Okay, well, that's exciting.
That sounds about as real as the American Motion Picture Corporation, which produced this film.
I noticed that as well.
And
it sounds like one of those oldie-timey companies like how RCA, like the Record American.
And both this and The Princess Switch were filmed in Romania. Princess Switch looked like it had a lot more in-studio sets than this one. This one looked like it had a little bit of location. So Romania, I guess, cheap to film in.
No, half the action films are filmed there these days. All like the direct-to-video action stuff is filmed through that rip part of the world as well. They have massive tax rebates, apparently.
Oh, I see. I haven't dipped into the direct-to-TV action.
They still call it direct-to-video, even though clearly that is not direct-to-video anymore. It's called direct-to-instant download.
It's quite an indirect route to video. Charisma, I bet you noticed that Aldovia has New York-style yellow taxis.
I did, and then that's our first callback of the second film, is that when the new dad, Dad 2, tries to hail a cab, then his cab is stolen.
A Christmas dad, the royal wedding. Yeah, Rudy. And his new presence is heralded by Princess Emily, who thought he would have had a goatee. And
because
then
the dad did have a goatee in the first film. But she's seen pictures of him.
This is not quite like the new George Lazenby is Bond saying this never happened to the other guy. but it's a pretty good throwaway line.
Yeah. So we re-meet Emily and the help. And I don't really know what any of those people do.
Just to clarify, are we just skipping over Sahil for now?
Oh, yeah, for now, because that wasn't his proper entrance. He has a fabulous entrance shortly.
Just was Mrs. Avril as much of a, how can I use a word that is not non-pejorative? I'll just go with bitch.
Yeah,
that's generic enough. Was she as much of a bitch in the first movie?
I mean, she was equally kind of like fussy and tight-lipped about everything.
But she didn't do as much.
No, well, she didn't. She'd been promoted in the second one.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I was curious because
she was like head of house. Like, she was like the...
And watching now, she's like head of curriculum. Like, is that like her promotion?
No, I'm not talking about in the school. Like, she's like the person who runs all of the staff. So in the first one, she runs the cleaning and house staff.
So she's...
And in the second one, she is like protocol and politics and like press conferences and stuff. Like, that's a very different role.
She's not as much of a bitch as Mrs. Medlock in The Secret Garden, who oversees Misselthwaite Manor, but she's up there.
Yeah, as I said, I think she just comes across as a very, like, fussy, tight-lipped British woman.
I have strong feelings about her in this movie, and I just wanted to know, since I haven't seen the last one, apart from the first 15 minutes that I was forced to rewatch for fretting about purposes, I wanted to know if she was as bad in the first one.
She doesn't really do anything much in the first one.
Except get hoodwinked, epically.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know how to, like, check someone's ID.
Yeah, she's terrible at HR, so that's all on her. I don't really know what her job is, but she's got to adhere to protocol. That's her main MO. And then Amber's dad is very dad about the whole situation.
He was recently taken up saying kiddo far too often.
Yeah.
He did not do that in the first film.
They throw shade at him almost immediately, like, you should go back to your room as you're tired after your long trip and we're tired by your arrival. Just instantly start throwing shade at the poor man.
Amber has to stay in a bridal suite, and I'm thinking, where did she stay all those other times she flew to Aldovia?
Just they hadn't made up a permanent room for her yet. Now they've cleared a part of a wing for the queen, obviously.
Do they still get to, like, hook up before the wedding day, or is that just
forbidden? Do that in his room.
I was curious about that, though. Like, has she just been, like, you know, turning his room into a shag palace every time they've gone, like, every time she's gone back for, like, previous trips? Or is it, like...
I mean, that seems quite plausible.
And now, because it's the wedding, they have to be separate? Because obviously he's staying at her place, like, when he goes to New York.
Yeah, he's staying in the apartment.
I think the purpose of the suite is for the wedding preparation.
Okay.
Also, it comes with bad poetry.
Oh, so bad poetry. So much bad poetry. I'm not a big poetry fan to begin with, at the best of times, but really basic two-word limericks.
I don't understand that romantic movie trope of, oh, and the guy's a poet.
No, because his dad did the poetry, and it's like a throwback to like how their romance blossomed and stuff, even though he's bad at it. It's like, remember that poem, which is the whole reason we're together? I wrote a bad one.
It doesn't impress me.
You've retained way more about this movie or have done a really good job reviewing the Wikipedia plot summary than I did.
I just take good notes, Andrew.
From the first one.
The poem.
I had basically forgotten the entire subplot about him being adopted.
Also, I didn't like the bunting in the bridal suite, but now we can move on from the suite.
Then we meet Sahil, the wedding planner.
There's just like some kind of like, what I can only assume is a welcome dinner of some sort, like meet all of the dignitaries and other humans who might be around at the palace.
Everyone who she greets with, hi, not good evening, sir. It's nice to meet you. Just, hi. Guys.
But that's how they, like, you know, draw, like, a contrast, because how she's, like, a fish out of water in this world, it's all overly formal. She's just, like, hi.
She's had 12...
they could have gone worse and made her, like, say howdy to everybody and, like, really play out at the cowpoke.
But... she's had 12 months to study how to greet dignitaries.
But surely it's also just she thought that she'd be, like, walking around with, like... Richard making polite conversation, yeah. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, he's gone. Okay, the Queen's just going to introduce me to everyone then. Great. But then Sahil.
Sahil is honoured to create for you the wedding of the century.
Yeah, he's fabulous.
Yeah, my comment is Sahil is an epic douche, ? And then I've written, why is there even a ? Also, world's best wedding planner, right? Is that a thing? Like,
he's not a wedding planner, he's a designer.
No, they call him the world's best wedding planner. Yeah, specifically use that line.
And then he says, corrects them.
I don't plan, I design.
And then for the next scene, I might have been distracted because I was actually looking up if there are a list of best wedding planners on the internet.
And?
There seems to be some articles, but there doesn't seem to be like an officially accepted like standard. Like, you know, like Forbes magazine does it, like richest people in the world. There's no like official benchmarking of best wedding planners.
I think it might just be an event manager. Like it might be an event management company would take on a royal wedding and you might know... the dress designer or the cake maker or the who else does things at weddings?
Like, I guess, florist and kind of like decoration.
Yeah, you might know those people in famous ways, but the wedding planner is probably just a company.
Oh, side note, this is completely off topic. What did we end up doing with all the flowers from our wedding? Someone actually asked me this question the other day and I had no idea. I just remember Dad whinging about the vases.
The woman took them away.
Okay, the flowers.
They stayed at the reception venue and then the woman came and collected them.
Okay, cool.
I thought I saw people taking some home.
Oh, yeah, we said people could if they wanted to. And obviously, like, we kept my bouquet for, well, not obviously, but people thought I would want to, so we kept it. And so I have lots of, like, delightful photos of it the next day. But, yeah, I think we just said if you want to take them, but anything that was left over, the event staff just cleared and then the florist came in, did something with them.
On that, you guys... were together a number of years, then engaged for how long do you reckon?
18 months.
And then, so I guess you guys planned your wedding in like 2 weeks as well, like these guys?
It's very nice of you that you said we planned. that's very generous to me. I would not say that it was a 50-50 effort. I think Chris did it like reasonably intelligently because she just like was able to bite off one thing at a time. So like, this is the venue. We will lock down venue. Then I move on to flowers. And she did a very good job of that.
But did she do it all in 2 weeks?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I was talking to some of my staff at work have just finished their exams, right? And I was saying, like, the best exam timetable is surely one where you have, like, an exam and then you have, like, 2 days off and then you have your next exam. Because for that 2 days, you get to focus on one thing. If it's all compressed into 2 weeks, you've got to try to do everything at the same time. So you're going to
I mean, they've known that they were getting married for a year. So really, they only have to have the people there to do it. Like, I mean, they obviously have the venue booked already. And that's like one of the things that takes kind of the longest amount of time.
Yeah, right.
It seems shocking to me that she arrived with no dress. Like that had never been discussed until 2 weeks beforehand.
We also probably should not give them like that much sympathy because they have like a household palace staff. So I feel like if they can rig up like a school play in an afternoon, less than 24 hours, they can rig up an entire set.
What I find most offensive is that this wedding is scheduled for Christmas Day. No regard for anyone's holidays. None of the palace staff get to spend Christmas Day with their families. The press can't take time off.
No, it's even worse than that because given this place is probably the size of a matchstick box as a country, it's a destination wedding as well.
Yeah. Oh, great. My friend's getting married in Europe. Where? I don't know.
At Christmas.
Surely they're all just staying in the palace.
That's not the vibe I'm getting.
I mean, did you see the church? It was not that packed. Compared to the welcome
dinner.
Yeah,
but that was like wedding like version 2.0. Like, I reckon they just probably went like with a big black Sharpie right through most of that list.
Yeah, I just found it really offensive. Just, yes, not everyone observes Christmas, but most people appreciate having a day off at least. So Amber's trying to get alone time with Richard and he's flat chat because he's trying to modernize the country, but the country's economy's gone to shit and no one can figure out why.
It seems like a thing they could have found out pretty quickly if it's been happening for more than like, you know, a month.
I'm curious about the dress. Like, apart from the fact that it looks like she's a dog that's just had some kind of like surgery that they don't want her to lick at, like... I just was curious as to what your lady's opinion was on the fine couture attire that they had planned for her.
I was not down with this dress.
The funnel in the picture, at least, was not what the funnel in real life looked like.
I don't think there should be a funnel anywhere near anybody's dress. However, if you are going to get married in snow country, in the middle of Christmas, then I guess you do want to be covered up. So that makes sense that she'd be having long sleeves everywhere.
I mean, lots of royal weddings also do have long sleeves because it's like a kind of regal conservative
thing.
It's
about protocol. It's about protocol.
And I think that, like, I thought the sleeves were the least of the problems of the dress. It looks like a toilet doll.
I was waiting for the classic Chekhov's gun. Like, I just kind of thought it would all be hacked to pieces and then become a couture designer number by the end. But it didn't really. Just a few baubles were removed from it, and it was very similar at the end of the movie.
I didn't
like it. It was a completely different dress.
It was a completely different dress.
So Amber's having this identity crisis that she's, because she also has to wear silver shoes, which were not too far away from Charisma, the shoes you wore to your wedding, but yours, obviously yours were better.
No, mine was strappy.
Okay.
They were very sparkly though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was just wearing the Jimmy Choos that they had on her were like just pretty standard Jimmy Choos, like, except that they were like a pale colour. I could wear them to work. Like, they didn't seem overly weddingy to me.
She was like, oh, that's it. This is not me.
Also, he's like, the footwear is the most important. And I was like, one, no, never. They're the least important. You almost never see them. Particularly if you've, like, designed a dress that you think is going to be, like, the centre of attention, then the shoes are literally the least important thing.
Yeah, I can't remember Meghan Markle's shoes. I don't think I saw them. So the sassy Skype pals return here. I don't think I've Skyped anyone in a decade, but she Skypes her friends all the time. They're coming next week. And also it's quite amazing that she's still friends with her two close workmates. Often when I move workplaces.
From a place that shut down.
Yeah, I have my best buddies at work, but then if I move on to a different job, those best buddies are relegated to Facebook acquaintances once I enter a new workplace a lot of the time.
I would say my experience mirrors that to a degree.
Mine less, but that is because my personality is drastically different from either of yours.
Charisma likes to collect people.
She really does. Okay, we're running up to one of my favourite scenes in this movie. The King, Richard, King Dick, has to give a speech to the public. I don't know why, but he just does.
He needs to make them feel better about the recession.
Yeah, morale boosting. He's there. There's people with the Aldovian flag where they're waving it around. And
it's very green.
A whole lot of protesters in the background yelling boo.
A bountiful future for all.
What about our jobs?
And holding placards that say great, great things like Aldovia is going broke and no more layoffs. And my personal favourite, why? !
I'm actually impressed, right? Because I actually started to look at reading the signs in the background of that shot, and I read the one that said Aldovia's going broke, and I'm like, there's no creative genius here. Stop doing this.
I
didn't read past the first one. I gave up. I'm like, there's no magic here. I missed the why.
I had to rewind three times to take a screenshot. But Aldovia's going broke is very informative. Much more informative than this one in red that just says, this is Aldovia.
Look, they're all very underemployed, right? Yeah. And unfortunately, that might have been the sign from the last protest they randomly attended, and they couldn't afford to produce a new sign.
But I mean, this is Aldovia.
Why aren't you sympathetic to their poverty?
Surely they mean them, so it's fine.
Well, I want a bit more clarity in my signage.
Yeah, that's too open to interpretation, sweetie.
What do you think this one says, Charisma? Where is
our pay?
Oh, okay.
Why are they expecting pay if they have no jobs?
Well, I guess they want back pay from when they got let go.
Or they want some like kind of government handout.
Severance
like,
pay.
Is there government handouts in there?
They want packages.
Does the one in the background just say bye-bye?
Yes. They saved that from the NSYNC concert. They just cut the top off.
Oh, dear.
It's my favourite scene. I want to go watch it for a fourth time.
I also will acknowledge that I had completely forgotten who the hell Simon was, because when he rocks up in that scene, I said, who is this swarthy protester man? Oh, wait. Oh, okay, he's that guy.
Yeah, evil cousin Simon.
I was like, oh, Simon has come back with a better haircut, looking like a street urchin.
But we still know he's evil cousin Simon because he gets evil music accompanying him now to signpost that. Now, Amber notices something's afoot with the politics of the country and wants to help the king, her fiancé, crunch the numbers since she helped her dad with his books at the diner.
Yeah.
And the king sort of mansplains, like, no, sweetie, you've got wedding planning to do.
I think he goes, I think he does worse than mansplaining here. King Dick really lost me in this scene, and he pisses me off for the next about 45 minutes of this movie. He basically says, stay in your lane.
Yeah.
And then he doubles down on that with, oh, you'll be too busy planning the wedding.
And when she's not planning the wedding, has to pick out Christmas decorations.
Also, why have neither of you discussed planning the wedding before now? Because then she wouldn't be just so distracted and you'd both have a bit more time.
And it's also something very easy to do via email in a long-distance relationship. Like,
Even when you're visiting each other, what do you think of this?
She could go to that, what's that Say Yes to the Dress shop that they always go to in New York?
I don't know because I don't watch that, but I know what you mean.
I'll think of it in 4 minutes. But she could have taken him there. They could have done a special Say Yes to the Dress episode that could have sponsored her blog post. And they could have picked the dress and it would have been a great.
And there's a good montage with her two ridiculous friends.
Yes.
And that's perfect. Why aren't we writing these movies?
Why do we want more of the friends?
Because otherwise, why are they there?
They had nothing of value.
I do enjoy that one of the friends is a gay man. And every now and then we know this.
But we also know he has terrible taste in men.
That's okay. That's
By the
fine.
End of this movie, we've established that he has terrible taste in men.
Now, Amber has to go on Christmas tree duty, which she is, for some reason, the most excited about this than anything.
Anything that is not wedding related, she's really excited about.
She's more excited about that than seeing her friends, than seeing her sister-in-law, like everything.
I think it's less the tree and like, wow, I actually get to spend more than 1 minute with the prince / king and no one else.
Yeah. It's like in The Bachelor when they go on one-on-one dates.
Yes. But then, surprise, there's no one-on-one date.
Yes, no, he's taken away for business again.
I did like the one line I enjoyed in that whole discussion was just, I promise there won't be any wolves this time. And in my mind, I thought, oh, there are definitely going to be wolves, aren't there?
Yeah, you can't promise that.
It did seem a very strange thing, unless they've killed all the wolves.
Like maybe he spent the last year like hiring packs of shooters to rove the property near the palace.
The Aldovian wolf cull of 2017.
Let them cull the entire population.
If I achieve nothing during my reign, it's to eradicate wolves. Now, there's this side plot with the dad, who's a diner chef, short order cook, and he's somehow half in charge of the wedding menu, but the
I don't think he is yet.
No. Well, I think Amber kind of says, just go to the kitchen. You can have fun there.
This is like the Z plot of this movie.
B plot is Princess Emily and her play.
Maybe that's
C plot.
There's a lot of little plots going on in this movie that they don't really actually feel the need to pay off, because even technically the pseudo romantic interests that the friends have when they come to the wedding technically are letter plots. But the Z plot is definitely the dad with the chef. The icy Eastern European ice queen.
Too many cooks, huh? No, this is your kitchen. I'm just here to help.
Dishes.
Excuse me?
You start with dishes.
And they just don't pay that one off at all.
At first I thought they were trying to do a sexual chemistry with the
dad. I thought they were doing a love interest thing. And I'm still not convinced they weren't. They just forgot to chuck the last scene on.
Yeah, or maybe they did and they didn't make the cut.
No, because she's walking around at the end with him. She's walking around introducing and talking about how great his food is. Like, she's like big supporter by the end.
She really was into the food by the end, though.
It seems weird to me that they're kind of like, if there's a payoff moment, came from like, oh.
His sliders are good.
No.
That's the payoff moment of that whole relationship arc.
You brought children into the kitchen. They were happy. It reminded me of my childhood when I'm happy, basically. But I also thought they'd done so much of like, okay, you start in my kitchen, you do dishes.
Yeah.
Okay, you chop these peppers. Like, I thought they could have been another thing where he actually cooked something and she was
the peppers
you know,
were
this
after.
Would be okay.
The peppers were
yeah,
after.
Yeah, like, this is a normal transition.
Because he brought her positive memories. He then has to cut the peppers.
He's away from the dishes.
But then he didn't do the final thing, which was cook a thing.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, because his burgers are famous at Rudy's Diner, I thought the burgers would be the hero of the dish at the wedding. But they were not.
He had little sliders. It's a recreation. You can't just sell a slider. You've got to, like, recreate the dish for a, like, fancier audience. Okay. Don't you watch enough MasterChef where they're always trying to deconstruct something?
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Oh, okay. Well, you mentioned Emily's play. Let's get back to that. Emily, who doesn't go to school, is somehow in community theatre.
No, she clearly is now at school. She's clearly, obviously, that's like the key learning. Remember how, like, they toboggan now?
Yeah.
She wasn't allowed to toboggan at the start of the first movie. So, like, you know, the Queen's, like, learned to lay the hell off and, like, try to give this kid a relatively normal childhood. I have a few questions about Emily.
Yes.
How disabled is she actually? Now, this sounds harsh, right? But in some scenes, she's being carted around in a wheelchair.
She has spina bifida.
Yeah. Did they ever actually explicitly say that?
Yeah, in movie one, she says it.
Okay, because sometimes she's walking around pretty much like with the crutches seemingly fine, and then sometimes she needs to be in a wheelchair. And it was just, there seems to be no rhyme or reason as to when this is occurring.
I think it's just like, it's clearly still difficult
whenever
whenever
we need her to stand up, if we can get her to stand up.
Yeah, but to prove that she kind of can now. But I think it's just like a reasonably normal assumption to say it's like probably quite a lot of effort getting around on the crutches all the time. So when she doesn't have to, she doesn't have to because she's a princess. Yeah.
Also, on a continuum from like, you know, adorable Oliver Twist style, like child urchin, and to like, you know, spoilt, pampered brat, where does Emily sit on that continuum? Because I think she hits the wrong side of halfway a few times for me.
I think she sits quite nicely in the middle.
It's only to Simon. Why do you love Simon so much?
Really? that's a big... Okay, sure.
I think she's more spoiled in the first movie with her private tutor. But I was also really sad that we never got to see Martha, the real Martha. You know, because she was still due to show up in New Year's.
She wasn't important anymore.
She should have been like the post-credit scene in the first one, though. Yeah. Like, they should have, like...
Just
she
turning
could have
up and
out.
Being like, oh.
Oh, no, actually, that would be this. I'll take that back. The whole movie, they have a wonderful gag about foreshadowing the dungeon, okay?
Yeah.
In this movie, right? Okay? The actual correct payoff for the dungeon joke would have been at some point showing Martha's still there.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I think I took a wrong turn. I'm looking for the schoolroom. Yes, perfect. I just wanted to see her. I just wanted to see her and say, hey, you assholes owe me 2 weeks' worth of wages.
I think she probably, well, not really, because she wasn't supposed to come until the new year.
Okay, true. Emily is in a play. The play plot does not matter. Because I didn't, it was, does not matter.
It's a traditional Aldovian Christmas
and
tale.
And Santa is there.
And a turtle.
And an ogre. But like, they talk about how Santa gets the powers from this princess from, I think it was called Princess From.
Froon.
Froon? Froon?
I thought it was Prune.
Or Froon.
Froon, okay. I think.
Froon?
I think.
Okay, Froon or Froon. And apparently at some point in the story, Santa gets the powers to be Santa from
Santa's
this princess.
Santa's a baby.
Yet the play itself seems to mostly revolve around, like, Emily trying to make out with, like, her ogre boy.
Yeah, that's all we get. That's all we get.
Where's it's... Santa? Like, you never see Santa.
A little baby that she pops up through the window.
Really?
I didn't get that.
Baby Santa?
Yes, that's baby Santa.
That wasn't apparent to me.
I missed that.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, okay.
Literally what you saw of the play was the ogre arrives in the village and goes, and everyone's afraid of him. And then she's locked in the tower and then they find the baby and she literally pops her head up when it's like, this is her moment. She and pops then, her head up in the window holding a baby and then she drops the baby, gets out of the thing, kisses the dude, and then he gets weirdly nakified.
With really bad stagecraft work. Like, you don't have stagehands wearing black if your backdrop is not black or you don't even drop the lights.
Well, they didn't have Come their on. Real stagehands because they went on strike. So...
Oh, can I talk about my favourite shot in the entire movie?
Go.
Is this stagehand who's just going on strike who walks over to the Christmas tree and turns off the Christmas lights. That is like the least subtle shot you could possibly imagine.
It's like, I am enraged. I am going on strike right before I just save energy by flicking this switch over here.
Also, I just have to put this extra lock and chain in front of a locked door for no reason.
And I think I'm getting a sense as to why the economy of Aldovia is in the crapper, because they go to this small theatre and where Emily's going to do her play, and then all the lights turn off because the workers have gone on strike and leave. And it makes me think, so they've got a working theatre with full-time working staff, and it's not just community theatre and volunteers and students. Like, it would be students in there doing all the lights and the props and everything, not just a full-time,
maybe,
fully staffed
maybe
theatre.
Every other year of that school, every other grade at that school, it is the students, but because it's, you know, Your Highness is in this class,
yeah,
they get, like, the upgrade.
It's like they were doing it at the Regent Theatre or some big...
No, that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Why is this a professional grade theatre?
So she can't have the play because all the theatre workers have gone on strike.
Everyone immediately had the same thought as me when this happened, being like, lucky you've got a palace, hey!
So
I was just devastated for Emily. I felt her loss and I didn't think they'd recover from that.
Also, there is no way she's got any friends at that school. Like, oh, the lead role goes to the girl who's only been at this school for 6 months.
I mean, that happens more often than you think, both in real life and also on television. It's just easy because they can all just keep calling her princess and it's not confusing.
So Amber sneaks away and has one of the staff stage the entire play in the palace, and Amber still gets the credit even though the servants
even though
do it.
Did it all. Yeah.
The butler, yeah. Also, for some reason, Amber has to make Emily's costume, when in the first movie, Emily hired staff to dress Amber.
Well, she's less pretentious now. And probably they gave her some, like, weird Sahil creation that she hated. And so Emily was just like, how about this very normal dress with some ribbons?
Now we have the entrance of Lord Leopold, whose full name I noted later was Leopold Plumtree.
Yeah, on the paperwork at the end.
He is an advisor that advised the previous king, and he's back to do some more advising. And he is adamant that the king does not do anything modern. No modern things, just keep on with the plan of...
No, he wants to modernise. He doesn't want to deviate from the current plan.
Right, yes.
Things are bad, But they'll turn.
Keep draining the economy.
You don't change horses midstream.
Unless you're running from wolves.
Now, I have issues with Leopold. We can spoil it because obviously people are not going to listen to this while they're watching the movie concurrently. This is not a
okay,
commentary track.
I've caught up to this scene.
I'm sorry, we are not talking in sequential order. This is terrible. No, obviously Simon is there primarily as a red herring. Right?
Yes. Which worked for me. I believe.
Works except for one shot.
I was sucked in.
Okay, it works for one shot because you don't know what his intent is. So every time he comes up and says, hey, I know about cryptocurrency. I was worried. I'm glad they skipped the scene where he starts talking about the blockchain. But like the issue I had with that was at the end of that scene when he comes and apologizes as he's leaving the room and he goes, they go, stop. Maybe I'll give you a chance. And he has this evil shit-eating grin that appears on his face.
Yeah,
there is that villain.
There's no reason for him to have that.
Because maybe he's just happy and his face looks like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I guess that's his genuine smile. And he just looks like a creeper when he smiles.
Yeah, and they've made his hair look even creepier. Like it was a good haircut for the street urchin Simon, but then it was a terrible haircut for the rest of the movie.
I question that. I also think that unfortunately, no matter what the work they're doing with Simon as a red herring, Leopold is just too obvious from minute one.
Yeah, because at first I thought he was meant to be someone from the first movie.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If he'd been in the first movie, even as like a scene or two, just to ground him as like, you know, an advisor of the family, it wouldn't have immediately raised your heckles immediately.
At one point I thought it was going to be Mrs. Averill, the baddie, because they said her name really suspiciously, like, Mrs. Averill! And I thought that was going to be when they go, j'accuse!
So a couple of things that kind of happen in this playing out between, like, Simon and Leopold and, like, which one of them is actually bad. I really felt myself as the movie went on that it's like you just keep getting more and more characters that's like, this person's the worst. Oh, this person's the worst. Like, Sahil, the worst. Simon, who knows if he's bad or not, but, like, he's not very likable, even if he's not evil.
And he's a little bit toxic in the way he talks about his divorce. Like, ugh, all my money went to the missus in the divorce. I'm like, well, you shouldn't have.
Well, what were you expecting to be, like, super woke about it?
You were duped by a clever but evil lady. Like, I mean, Sophia was the worst. Like,
Sophia was a horrible character, and it makes perfect sense that she would absolutely bilk him dry. But, like... Like, I'm not sure we can expect, like, social justice warrior levels of, like, wokeness from him as he, like, looks back and goes, you know what? I made some bad choices. She perhaps wasn't a good person. And in my next relationship, I'm going to look deeper. Yeah. I'm going to look for inner beauty and not just, like, you know, a shallow, vapid exterior.
So do you know who isn't the worst?
Who's not the worst?
Okay. Ernest Mason.
Ernest Mason!
The best name ever. I just imagine he works in a stoneworks somewhere. Like,
and
that was his factory.
He's a very straightforward stonemason.
Charisma, can you set up how we find him?
So basically the family are doing their not quite on Christmas, at some point before Christmas, reading of the Christmas card.
Sounds so tedious. If my family ever tried to bring that in as a tradition, I'd be like, what if we didn't all sit around and read each other's Christmas cards out loud?
Yeah, I think that like
we
in my family.
We have a small enough family that it wouldn't take that long, thank God. But can you imagine that with like heaps of cards?
Well, obviously my family all go to church, and in the church there's a lot of Christmas cards that circulate. So we did like have like across the awning of like a window have like all of the Christmas cards we received hung there. But they would be like you'd get one in the post and someone would say, oh, a Christmas card from like the auntie and uncle, and then they would put it there.
Yeah, and you
no,
read
no,
it.
No, you're ratting out your parents. Her parents read every single Christmas card they received, really took the message to heart, and really appreciated the effort, and then hung it up for everyone to see.
Yeah, that's very nice.
They read it in their minds. They didn't have like an event to read them.
No, I'm just suggesting that you made it sound a little bit like they just kind of got the card and flipped it up on an order.
No, they care a lot more about cards than I do.
Yeah, they read it, but there wasn't a ceremony.
So there's a lot of these cards, and they're all like, we love you, royal family. You're doing great. Have a good Christmas.
And Mrs. Averill didn't screen these cards.
No one screened them.
The pile just went straight to the Queen.
Yeah, but we've already established since she like allowed a random stranger breaking into the palace to become the tutor.
She's just going to let potential chemical terrorism
happen.
She fails
up. She fails up. We've established that she fails up. Okay, this woman is like unsackable for some reason. Maybe she's got some dirt on the family. That woman is not going down for basic things that would get any human fired.
So one of these cards is not like pro the royal family, and it says like basically, hi, I hope you're doing well, but also I lost my job and I hate everything about this country now, you failed us.
And the lovely Merry Christmas message on the front of the card.
I'm not actually sure the message is like, hey, I hope you guys are well. I think that's a bit slight. Like,
no, I think it starts with some platitude.
She starts reading it as if it's going to be a nice message.
No, as I'm saying, like, but I think like that it's not that it's meant to be nice. I think it's meant to be sass. Like,
sure, but either way, that's how it plays out. So then,
also, it's basic reading comprehension that you read the entire thing before you read it out loud to understand context and tone.
I really do think the next Christmas card she was going to open was going to have like
death threats of some kind.
Death threats.
Well, someone sent us some Christmas glitter. So Amber decides to, as a journalist, she suddenly remembered she is one, because meanwhile she's been blogging and she's been censored. Mrs. Averill's been deleting the posts.
Who knows how?
You can't put photos of a child princess with icing on her nose on the internet, okay? That's
Amber remembers she's a journalist and decides to get some investigative journalism happening.
And yeah, that's of course the only other reason that the friends need to be there, is because even though they are far worse at being journalists than she is, based on everything else we've seen, they can comically pantomime run around a house hiding in, like, door frames in order to find and steal, I guess, a Christmas card to find out the name of this person.
And then they find him in a bar, a dive bar.
But you're one of them. Why should I trust you?
Why else would I be here? I want to understand what's going on, too.
This whole new Aldovia initiative, it's a fraud.
It was supposed to be a way to get the country to invest more money back into itself.
Well, that being the case, then the money should actually stay in Aldovia.
Basically, there's like the dude is drinking his sorrows away because he's very upset about not having a job.
I think we also need to talk about how sunglasses are not a disguise.
Okay? Yeah, sunglasses inside.
Maybe sunglasses and a hat?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll let you get away with, right?
She does have a hat. Exactly the same outfit in pink and grey that she's been wearing for the entire movie.
The hat comes off when she goes inside.
She's disguised as herself. She's wearing her outdoor clothes as a disguise.
Chrisma also didn't like her backpack, but I personally just fixated on the sunglasses.
I noticed the backpack too and wondered what on earth she needed to carry around with her in there.
That wouldn't fit in a jacket pocket.
Yeah, I thought it was her sleuthing kit. So maybe it's her laptop in the back.
No, it's just I'm literally only wearing one outfit the entire time I'm here.
My favourite bit from the bar interrogation scene was Amber takes out her journalist notepad and writes the following notes onto it. The first being Meadowlark,
which is the name of the dodgy company that needs to be looked into, and then
Fishy, to explain that there's something dodgy going on here. Yep. Those two words, she's going to be a loss to the industry.
So once again, in something that is extremely predictable foreshadowing, find out that Meadowlark is like a company that is kind of Aldovian in name, but it's definitely owned like by people overseas. Do you know who just came back from overseas? Leopold from Monaco.
Leopold Plumtree.
Best name, Leopold Plumtree. And then
Simon comes to save the day. Like, he arrives mysteriously in the same bar, and there are, like, press who've turned up and have recognised her in her not at all, like, a disguise. And he's like, don't worry, I know a back way again. How? Who knows why? But he's there. He saves the day. They follow him. And then he has a comically not fancy car. It's like a Volkswagen of some kind. It may even be like a Trabi. Like, it's a very old Eastern European car.
All I noticed from then on is he starts making eyes at the friend, Melissa.
Correct.
Yeah, almost immediately. Yeah. Charisma noticed that before I did.
And she's very receptive to it for someone who would know the backstory of him trying to hoodwink the royal family.
They both seem very thirsty about it very quickly.
And Amber doesn't even go, hey, that's the guy that nearly took my husband's crown.
They're like, yeah, but he's staying in the palace, right? It's fine.
And she's staying at her folks, so like she's really like incentivized to like get something going on that might get her out of that house.
Meanwhile, Princess Emily is enlisted to hack into the computer like the girl from Jurassic Park.
I've got Emily is elite hacksaw written down, which is some like,
because she couldn't sit down with her computer at any time before now.
No, like as I said, like she was only allowed to study and go to the loo, but now she, in the last year, she's become a thespian. Yeah. She's become an elite hacker.
She's a real Renaissance lady, Emily. She can do it all. So we find out about the Glockenspiel Consortium after overnight hacking that is funneling all of the... I've run out of steam trying to explain this.
So they work out that as well as Meadowlark, there are two other companies and the three of them are getting the bulk of the contracts that for all of the kind of...
infrastructure work.
Yeah. And so then they work out that these three companies are owned by a shell company called Glockenspiel Consortium. And then there's a big reveal that not actually is a reveal, but everybody knows it's definitely Leopold at this point.
Yeah, the
camera... Oh, no, I was shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
The camera doesn't pan down to the bottom half of the screen to show his name on the contract. We'll find out later. In the meantime, Amber's splashed all over the front page because she went to a bar.
Yeah, with her friends.
There is a nice scene here, though, and she pieces out of there. She's had enough. She's gone on the lam.
Oh, no.
Because he continues to be a douchebag. King Dick is, like, a douchebag for the majority of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, actively an unsupportive douchebag.
To the point where the housekeeper says, pull your head in to his queen, and he goes, yes, please, pull your head in.
Well, I think technically he goes...
Look, he is backing women, though. He is backing possibly the wrong woman, but he is still backing women.
Yeah.
He's very enlightened.
Emily has a nice scene where she's counselling her brother. I forgot what she says, but it was nice. She basically told him to pull his head in. And then he jumps on the horse and finds Amber in the secret cottage that's not really
well,
a secret.
Well, doesn't Emily say, by the way, I just need to tell you this secret about who, like, your actual, like, problem is. Also, nice things about Emily. And he says, there's only one place she could be, which seems factually incorrect, but obviously it's going to be the cabin.
But also, it's the king's cabin, so why hasn't anyone looked there? Because that's where all the secret papers were that time. People should go, you know where she might be? That place where all the secrets usually are. So we get her back, they make up, and then they j'accuse Leopold Plumtree for siphoning the country's money into his own businesses. And he is sent to the dungeon, which is now a real thing,
no,
not
he
a
goes,
joke.
Oh, well, I'll just be off then. And everyone's like, okay. And then Amber's like, no, I am going to shoot you with this arrow. And he was like, no, you aren't. Emily says, yes, she is. And she doesn't, but he still stays there.
There's two times in this movie where Amber nearly commits homicide. Like, she nearly kills her friends with the arrow when they arrive, and then she nearly kills this man. I am a bit sad that Amber's last foray into journalism is just, there's no fanfare. It's like, okay, give up your job now. Don't be sad about it. Just stop doing it. She's not even allowed to keep a royal blog, I imagine. Then we have the King Dick's address to the nation, where he announces what exactly?
I'm happy to tear up this speech I was given.
No.
Now watch me tear up this speech.
He says, I'm so glad that I've been able to tear up the speech, and then proceeds to pause whilst he tears up that very same speech that he has already indicated he has torn up.
Basically to say, you know all of those economic problems? We found out whose fault that was. Good news, we got the money back.
And then everyone cheers.
We gave everyone a Christmas bonus.
Everyone in the entire country. It reminds me of that time Kevin Rudd gave us all money for some reason.
Yes, because he wanted to avoid a recession.
Yeah, so we all got the stimulus package of like $500 or something?
900.
No, 900.
So during the GFC, our Prime Minister basically said, here's how we're going to keep people spending. We're just going to give anyone who paid tax the year before $950 to spend on something. It worked pretty well.
That was a good day. This is like that, except everyone in the country assumed from that television message that they would all be getting payday. Yeah, no one was worried about the fine print.
He cleverly didn't specify what the bonus was.
But they all acted like Tiny Tim getting the turkey on Christmas Day. The fugly tree gets lit.
Yep, that is an ugly tree is my next comment.
Yep. I have something far more sweary as my description of the tree. I too am not a fan.
That's one of my pet peeves of these straight-to-TV Christmas movies when they're set in fake European countries is they all just look like someone's American
sensibilities.
Someone's front yard, like Tim the Toolman Taylor's front yard. And now the wedding.
King Richard, you may kiss your bride, Queen Amber of Aldovia.
Wedding of the year. I think there was more people at your wedding, guys.
100% there were more people at our wedding than in that church.
And I would like to think that we would have done a better job with the conga line because, like, that conga line was really uncoordinated.
Definitely.
People moving in different directions. The best lady friend who's, like, when she's not busy thirsting after Simon, she's leading the train, but there is no coordination going on.
At the very least, you guys would have been doing a conga line to Gloria Estefan's conga and not to some undistinguished production music.
I'm not gonna
pretend that I had any control over the music at our wedding. I was told that we were hiring the DJ from the Perseverance 90s night. I thought this was acceptable.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure that Sahil, like, it's surprising that he didn't just, like, off himself.
Why is he there? Why is he still there? He is an employee that has been hired to do a job and then has been punted from said job. And suddenly he's allowed to hang around for the wedding?
I guess the event planner would stick around to make sure it was all running on schedule.
But is he still in any way associated with the event? You don't see him during the ceremony manhandling people, checking the clock.
Well, maybe
sending the people down the aisle.
Maybe one of the friends invited him. One of the thirsty friends invited him as a date.
No,
maybe.
But the thirstiness with Sahil doesn't come until the reception party,
which
the party
I was
afterwards.
Here for. I was here for that 4 seconds of sexual moment.
So I think it becomes reasonably clear. Like, I'm glad that the wedding is all about them and they do seem to be having a good time. But it's pretty clear why she was not allowed to plan this wedding. Because, first of all, no one's sitting in the front rows of the church. It's very empty for, like, the first two rows. And then all of a sudden they're in the front in a later shot. Secondly, she's not wearing a veil at all, which is fine as a choice. But I had issues with her hair in this whole movie that I didn't have in the first movie.
Same.
And I think that, like, a veil would have just made it less bad.
Doesn't she have it up?
She has it up, but she could have had...
Mine up.
Yeah, I just realised that after I said it and knew I was going to get called out for it.
She could have had some kind of jewel barrette
or something.
Did you have
a veil?
Or like a... Yes.
I don't actually remember.
You did not just ask your wife if she had a
veil. Yeah, I actually did. And to be fair, Charisma will bail me out on this one because she thinks I was like a frozen, like stressed out robot when we were in the process of actually getting married. And that I only got over it like after like the official I do bit.
But Charisma, didn't you also have a sparkly clip in your hair as well?
So I had like a comb because I only wore the veil in the church. And then for the reception, I just had the comb in.
The comb I remember.
I think Amber needed a comb.
I think so. Or bigger earrings or something. Because it just
to bring it together.
Well, also because I think like the simple dress was weird. It looked a bit like pajamas. But like equally, it was kind of in fitting with lots of like royal wedding dresses.
It looked a bit like a hoodie.
It looked a bit like Sahil's shirts in white, to be honest, which I thought was a weird throwback to someone who's like such royal choices you didn't like. But like no veil, clearly no theme. The left-hand side of the church looked like they're dressed for a funeral because they're all in navy.
And the whole thing was dark.
And
I couldn't see anybody.
There are not enough hats for a royal wedding.
Yeah, one of the best friends had a fascinator, which was acceptable. But that's it.
There were like two others in the church, but like almost every European royal wedding I've seen is like full of hats.
It's like race day.
There were very few hats.
Then she goes from nothing on her head to the world's biggest crown when she becomes not
that
just...
That is an awkwardly sized crown. That was my comment. I'm like, what the hell? That's too big.
Anyway, I still found it rude that this whole wedding was on Christmas Day. And Simon and Melissa each flirt with Sahil. And
all the douche members of the cast.
Yeah, evil cousin Simon.
Complimentary douchebags.
All the douches are rewarded with love. And the first dance is to the Nutcracker Suite. King Dick and Amber.
Thoughts
and
about this? Who are the dancing randos?
Yeah, because they're dancing by themselves and they're not doing a terrible job. Like, it's not completely uncoordinated. And then suddenly there's a small group that come on.
Like four other people who are not in the bridal party who we've never seen before.
Okay, I've emceed a couple of weddings, including yours. And sometimes at these weddings, they tell me, now go and tell person X and person Y that at this point in the song, they can join the dance floor.
Were you told to do that at us?
No.
No one was. Why weren't you instructed to bail me out as fast as physically possible?
Because.
She's still, and whenever I make any attempt to dance, like it's a fair 50% chance that my wife is going to bring up my awesome dancing skills at our wedding.
Maybe that was Sahil's only job, is to go and tell those eight people to crash the dance floor 30 seconds into the song. And then Emily's DJing the rest of the time.
Yeah, another secret skill there.
Okay, can we come back to one thing we haven't discussed?
Yeah.
Mrs. Avril.
Because I don't understand what she is.
Okay, I get really annoyed in these movies, particularly like when they're like movies that feature like office politics and stuff like that. And there's always someone in the office who is just a complete horrible human being the entire movie. And in this movie, just a random obstacle at all turns. And Avril is this in this movie, right? Like, she is absolutely not just like pointing out that she's breaking protocol, but like taking like a sadistic level of glee. Yeah.
Censoring blogs.
Yeah, but like taking genuine glee and like throwing shade about it as well, right? Like disrespecting the dad the minute he comes in and everything.
And taking the Amber's dead mother's locket.
You can't wear the locket.
You can't wear the locket.
You can't wear the locket.
What a bitch.
You were at a bar, so therefore you're like a scandalous hoe bag. Like, you know, it's like slut-shaming her because she was in a bar. Like,
no, it's just it's against protocol.
Yeah, okay, because that, yeah. Anyway, either way, she's a horrible human being throughout the entire movie. But then at the end, everything works out and she's happy again and bygones be gone, bygones. No way. She should be sacked. There is no way, like, if once they become king and queen, that woman can stay. She has to go.
She's got to go. She can go and live with evil cousin Simon.
She picked the wrong side.
In his own estate.
She picked the wrong side. It's like a political cult.
She can become the countess.
You pick a side, and if your side wins, you're all great. Unfortunately, she lost.
If you expose the palace to chemical terrorism, your tenure is finished.
Or potential child abductor. People who might abduct the baby... Baby of the household.
All right, so let's all nominate our favourite scene, and that is awarded a monetized blog all about itself or character. I am going to give a monetized blog to all the protesters that made placards in the Aldovian town square.
I will give a monetized blog to Princess Emily because I feel like it can just be about new skills that she picks up like on a monthly basis. It's like, guys, this week I've decided to try out hacking. Here's how it went.
I'm going to go with the reveal of the really, really fugly tree because I feel like that is something that you would see pop up in your social media feed as like some kind of travesty.
Like nailed it. Tree fails.
Tree fails. Hashtag tree fails.
Thank you very much. I was going to say for going to the effort of watching Netflix Christmas movies, but it sounds like you're doing that anyway. And I just happened to join you guys. Andrew. Can people tweet to you, Andrew?
I mean, they can.
You it's have Twitter.
It's at APT137, I think. And it's like a generic little photo of a kangaroo, such as my level of interest in following.
Is that Tom Hanks's username in You've Got Mail?
No, it's my initials and a number that I use for things.
Okay, never mind. Charisma?
At Charisma, K-R-I-Z-M-A-H. In fact, most of my social media has that in it.
Even though her name is spelled Charisma, the way you spell the word.
You say that, but no, apparently not everyone knows how to spell the word based on my frequent coffee orders and at phone Chastity. Messages.
And Charisma also has an Instagram called Lady Office Style, where she puts together fashion challenges that you can either participate in or just observe.
Lady Office Style did kind of fundraiser thing for ovarian cancer in October, but you can still contribute even though it's not October anymore. It was called Froctober. I wore dresses for more than 30 days in a row, which in Melbourne seems like it would be kind of fine. Was not.
Different dresses, we should point out. Not just...
I mean, you can just... Some people don't wear dresses at all, so they like wearing a dress every day is kind of an effort. Yeah. I wore a different dress for nearly 60 days.
And the details to donate are
I'm
on...
I'm glad we have a spare bedroom, though, for her to like randomly store every single one of those 60 dresses in.
Yeah, so details via Instagram, or you can look up Lady Office Style in the Ovarian Cancer Society in Australia.
And I'm Vaya Pashos. We are Buddy Watch Pod on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can subscribe to us for more festive entertainment. There's a cracker coming up with Adam Richard and a Christmas movie starring both Lacey Chabert and Mariah Carey. And we'll be recapping that and buddy watching it. And I can't even contain my excitement. Thanks for listening. We'll chat to you soon. Bye.
Bye.